Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Stanford routes.
I never get tired.
I know, me neither.
My favorite part of Wednesdays.
Takes me back. Such a great time in life, man.
It is well-spoken Wednesday. So we got Stanford route in the building. Bill O'Brien, it's been this way for 8 months, according to Cal McNair, but now it is official. And the duties are accompanied by an official title. Bill O'Brien, coach/GM. Stanford route, your immediate reaction.
Well, for one, that would make a hell of a business card to be able to hand out to people. Coach and GM.
And offensive coordinator.
Yeah, and offensive coordinator. When I first saw it, I was not surprised. I wasn't. Do I think that it's the best move for Cal McNair to make? No, I do not believe that, not even in the slightest bit, simply because you don't see too many successful head coach slash GMs in the league. I believe Bill Belichick is some version of that, even though he doesn't have the official title of general manager. Same thing with Sean Payton. Mickey Loomis is the GM out there, although Sean Payton has a heavy imprint on the actual makeup of the team. I think, at least I'm assuming, if we all want to go ahead and give Cal McNair somewhat of a reprieve, maybe he's just simply giving Bill O'Brien enough rope to hang himself.
You're not the first person to say that. I had a couple people text me. It's where, you know what? It's not the best move, but if you're going to work under the premise that Bill O'Brien is going to be here at least another year, probably another 2 years, then give him the rope so it can be a clean cut. You know, you can just pull the Band-Aid off if it does fail.
But, man, can't you hang the whole organization?
Yeah.
Like, if you give
you can
a guy,
set it back.
Yeah, I mean, if you make a bunch of mistakes, you start trading draft picks, you screw up the cap, Deshaun Watson doesn't take the next step. Yeah, sure, Bill O'Brien can hang himself with that rope, but he could also hang the organization.
Right? Yes, I agree with that, but I think that there's a lot of people that are in managerial positions or just in ownership front office positions that have the belief that if it is not broken, we don't need to fix it. Now, once again, are the Texans a finished product? Are they in the Super Bowl this week? Hell no, they're not. But you can look at it from the standpoint of they're not broken because you know what? They made it further this year.
But you set
them
back. He's talking about like let's say it's an abject failure.
Yes.
Bill O'Brien.
I know, and that's the point what I'm trying to make is that for a lot of people, they believe that if it's not completely broken, we don't need to fix anything. So because it's not completely broken, I can't just go and fire Bill O'Brien. I can't just do that because we didn't go 6-10. We didn't go 4-12.
Right.
We made to the playoffs. So maybe, just maybe, he's actually giving Bill O'Brien, okay, here's the entire keys to the entire automobile dealership. So you know what?
Buyer
beware. You can sink or swim, and I'm going to give you enough rope to hang yourself. And guess what?
No one's saying he should be fired, Stan.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people around this city that have said that.
No, nobody. Nobody in here. But damn, well, promotion. No,
that's once again. Hear me out. I think that he is giving him enough rope to hang himself. That way, if the Texans go 7-9 this coming 2020 season and do not make the playoffs, now he has nobody he can point the finger to. He can't say, oh, well, you know what? I didn't get the right players that I wanted in the draft, or I didn't get this, I didn't get that. So he's, like I said, giving him enough rope to hang himself.
He can't even plant stories anymore.
Exactly.
Like, he undercut Rick Smith, and he allegedly undercut Brian Gain. With all these national, writers, like, I'm not getting exactly what you're talking about.
Yo, rap, you up?
Yeah, yo, rap, you up? But I'm starting to buy in with what John McClain said. Now that he's got the title, Stan, he goes 7-9 next year. There's still going to be a 2021 with him because he's like, hey, man, I've only been GM 1 year.
but Cal said it's been this way for 8 months.
Yeah, but he's only been GM 1 year.
Yeah, but Cal said he's been performing the duties for 8 months.
Yes,
and he just said it was a title.
Yeah, ever since they fired Brian Gain, I believe it was in June, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, yeah, but he's got plausible deniability on that. Really,
I mean, I get it. I like I said, hey, man. You go and you're the head coach and you now get the GM title. That's great for you and your trajectory in business and all of that. From the standpoint of me just simply looking on the outside, looking in, you see that and you have to wonder, okay, what's the reasoning? What's the mindset? What is the methodology behind this? And that's the only thing I can come up with, that maybe he's just simply giving him enough rope to hang himself, or Cal McNair of the mindset continuity will always win.
But that's a lot of continuity. That's a lot of continuity.
I agree completely. But like I said, a lot of people are of the mindset that, you know what, if it is not completely downtrodden, we'll go ahead and just stay the course.
Did you ever use Star 6-7 as a kid? Prank call people?
Oh, so they didn't have the caller ID?
Yeah, so they didn't have... Yeah, Star 6-7.
Way to put that out there,
Landry. Star 6-7 is the one where you can block your number?
Block the number.
Yeah, you block your number.
Yes, I've done that. Yeah, I did that back in high school.
You do that to prank call, right?
I would.
Because you don't want people to know what you're doing.
I didn't do that to prank call. You know what I did that was, and it's kind of embarrassing for me to say now, but oh well. I would do that if I was trying to call a girl who I thought maybe wouldn't answer if she, like, she saw my caller ID come up or something like
people
that.
Still do that. People
like,
still do that.
Yeah, this is like back like in high school, man.
So the reason I say that is because Bill O'Brien basically got to use Star 67 every time he'd go up to the podium and say that a move was made.
Yes.
Well, everybody got to. Well, everybody was a part of it. Basically, effort, Star 6-7 right there. He can't do that anymore.
And no,
he might as well FaceTime now. No more prank calling for B.O.B.
And no, you're right. He can't. And once again, that's where the mindset behind this move by Cal McNair might actually be deriving from.
Let me ask you this, because I brought this up a couple of times, and it's one of the things that I just start to kind of feel a little uncomfortable about. Bill O'Brien is going to be in the room negotiating contracts.
Oh, yes, he is. He's the GM now.
He's going to be in the room when Laremy Tunsil says, well, you spent two first on me, man.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk highest paid left tackle in football. And you know what Bill O'Brien's going to do?
Oh, you led the league in penalties.
Self-preservation. He's going to say, sure, man. Because he's not going to not sign Laremy Tunsil.
But what?
Not going to not sign that.
Couldn't you see him holding a grudge, though? To where, like, if it gets ugly, negotiations get ugly? Does Bill O'Brien seem like the type of guy that's going to be able to separate, like, an emotional contract negotiation?
When it comes to
his
own.
And then all of a sudden go out there on the field and say, let's go?
When it comes to his own self, when it comes to his own job, yes. Stan. You've been in these negotiations. You've been in these rooms.
Yes.
When you know you've got them over a barrel, not only do you have them over a barrel.
I can remember a few of those.
But the general manager across the table from you cannot not sign you, or else it could be his ass.
Mm-hmm.
Bill O'Brien, that's one of the biggest worries I have. Number one, he's going to be in the room, first of all. It's not going to be Chris Olsen, who knows more about cap and money than anybody else.
Yes, he will.
He's going to be in the room. And number two, he's going to be saying yes to a lot more than other people would not be saying yes to, because he's got to protect himself.
Yes, he does. But I think at the same time, he's still going to be aware of the salary cap. He's still going to be aware of the cap issues. He's still going to know that, you know what, if he doesn't, then he really is underqualified for that position, because you still have to know in the
there's some breaking news from Sanford Rowell.
You still have to know in the back of your mind that I still have to set aside X amount of dollars because I know I got number four coming down the pike really, really soon.
Is there anything more silly than people saying that Bill O'Brien has proven he's a good GM because of what he did from July to now? He hasn't even gone through free agency or a draft. And I'm not saying that he can't be a good GM, but nothing he did proves that he could be a good GM at this point, or that you should feel good about it. At the very least, there should be some sort of healthy uncertainty as to what kind of GM he's going to be.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a healthy level of uncertainty. Now, in Bill O'Brien's defense, he went out there, he got Laremy Tunsil, who turned out to be a Pro Bowl left tackle. And then he also went and traded for Kenny Stills.
That's great.
A very, very nice second/number 3 type of receiver.
That's great.
Who also was productive for the Houston Texans this year. I'm not saying he's an all-pro or anything like that, but when you think about GM, they went out there and they filled the left tackle position. They filled the left tackle need. Did they overpay? Yes, Landry, they did.
Yeah,
but guess what?
Thank you.
In life, if you want something that is decent to average to above average, you're going to overpay. Ask anybody that lives inside the loop in Houston, Texas. Ask anybody. Believe me, you're going to overpay.
I'm with you, man.
You go to Kenny Stills. I think he's a really, really, really nice number 2/number 3 receiver.
Is he?
Is he not?
Yeah, he is. No, you can't say he's not.
Let me tell you why he's
not. Is he not?
Let me tell you why he's not. And this goes to my
name one team in the NFL right now. He would not be their number 2 or number 3.
Hear me out.
Especially number 3.
Hear me out on this, Stanford. Bill O'Brien's job as GM is harder than any other GM, because he has to have Bill O'Brien as coach. And when Will Fuller is out of the lineup, there's a huge drop off, despite the fact
can you imagine the type of a drop off it would have been if it would have been minus Will Fuller, during the games that he missed, and no Kenny Stills, nobody else, and Kiki QT is now your number two.
I'm just saying,
if you throw
a second round pick in for a receiver as a GM, you should hope that you have a coach that isn't going to have that much of a drop off. But because Bill O'Brien is the coach, you don't maximize these trades. Furthermore, when you make trades like the Laremy Tunsil deal, assuming that Bill O'Brien is going to be the GM for the next 3 years, if that's what you're selling me on, are those trades? You can't do those every year.
No, you can't.
You can't do that every year because you run out of assets.
Yes.
So, okay, cool. You overpaid. You said it. Even guys that are on the side Laremy Tunsil thing, you said he overpaid. Lopez said he overpaid. Okay.
There's no way
you can't do that every year.
No, you
can't do that every year.
There's no way that you can, in the NFL, get an average to above average to great player without overpaying. That's impossible.
What do you mean it's impossible?
It's damn near
impossible.
Okay, give me an example of one where it did not happen. They did not overpay for an average to above average player.
Well, I would say...
Not the Texans, just in general in the NFL.
Well, I would say Bill Belichick, New England Patriots, Trent Brown. He was the highest paid offensive lineman last offseason. They traded, a fourth and a third for him when their left tackle went down?
Well, I'm talking about... Good. I think Stan's talking about someone in their prime.
Yes.
Someone who's already reached a certain level. You're going to overpay. You can't deny that.
Anybody who's reached that level, you're going to overpay. Trent Brown, what team does Trent Brown play for?
Plays for the Raiders.
He plays for the Raiders, right? Mm-hmm. The Raiders, did they trade for him or did they sign him in free agency?
They signed him.
Why the hell did the Patriots not re-sign that guy? Because they weren't going to what? Overpay!
Well, guess what? The Texans are going to overpay twice. And this trade that you guys are sitting here talking about how great it is, they overpaid with draft compensation, and they're going to have to pay a high price for Laremy Tunsil.
I did not say it was a great trade. I said that's a necessary evil.
I'm with you, man.
That's a necessary evil. Because if you don't do it, then you know what? My man's left side, his blind side is, once again, is going to be at risk, and he's going to be able to take, he's going to be taking more and more hits. So what are you going to do? You got to go ahead and fill that need. And are you going to overpay? Yes, you are. If you want to go and you want to get an apartment in Tribeca, or you want to get an apartment over there in Manhattan, you're going to overpay for it.
River Oaks.
Period.
Or you can do what?
Go and live in Scarsdale? Something like that?
You just drive to work.
Okay, but what if you have to live inside in the
city,
in New York City?
Sorry to our listeners out there. Sorry for Stanford frowning upon your surroundings right now. What do you mean? What are you talking about?
Hey, guys, I know a thing or two about real estate. And I can tell you, certain areas in every city, in every state of this country.
Humble brag right there. Right? Yeah, wow. I know a thing or two about real estate.
I like that. No, I'm with you.
Let me tell you about real estate.
I'm just simply saying that, guys, there's times where you are going to have to overpay, and there's no way around it.
That's fine. Stanford Brout in the building. Let's get more into this Bill O'Brien thing. We'll take some calls as well. We'll sprinkle in some calls with Stanford Brout. 713-572-4610. Well-spoken Wednesday continues next. All right, Stanford Brout in the building reacting to the news that Bill O'Brien is the head coach / general manager. If you were a player for, let's say, the Tennessee Titans, Colts, or Jacksonville Jaguars, and you heard that Bill O'Brien was officially named coach and GM.
Yes.
When that alert came to your cell phone, what would your reaction be?
If I was a player?
Yeah.
If I'm a player for the Jaguars, the Colts, or the Titans, I really don't give a damn because I play for the Jaguars, Colts, or Titans. So that's
you don't care about teams in your division?
No, what I'm saying is that I'm not going to immediately see that on my phone and then go and either A, jump off a cliff or just, you know, throw my hands in the air and throw a parade because that doesn't really have.
What about other coaches and general managers?
Other coaches around the league that see it?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, there's going to be other coaches that see that and like, oh, you know what? Maybe I want to now all of a sudden be a GM for the team that, you know, I'm a head coach for. Or everybody's going to have their own personal opinion, especially like I said, the coaches around the league, they're going to feel that, you know what? He doesn't deserve that. Good for him. Maybe he can go ahead and start a trend for more and more head coaches to become GMs and things like that and have that dual title. But as a player, I'm really not going to care because it's not necessarily going to affect me in any way because I don't play for the Texans. I'm not a free agent looking to get signed by the Texans. So as a player, you really don't care because it doesn't mean that much to you.
I'm thinking more like along the lines of it might make coaches and general managers might be kind of smirking, saying, my life just got a little easier, I think. No, oh, I'm far, just being honest.
Coaches around the league, yes, they will feel that. If they think that Bill O'Brien is somebody who obviously is underqualified for that position,
right.
They will feel that, you know what, okay, now the negotiations that I have with free agent players, I don't really have to worry about the Houston Texans being much of a big player or that because I feel like I'm easily a better GM than Bill O'Brien,
right.
Things like that. Yes, from that aspect, yeah, I do believe that other head coaches, GMs, they probably will go ahead and smirk because – they think that he's just inexperienced, and that's going to show this coming free agent period. But I think that there's also going to be some people that like it from the standpoint of it's going to create
from the industry aspect.
Exactly.
Of it.
Like, wow, now guys can be a head coach and a GM, and maybe if one more person all of a sudden gets a GM role as a head coach, that can maybe start another trend because I think that coaches are control freaks, man. And if you got head coaches that can be GMs as well, there's going to be a lot that take that opportunity.
NFL, former NFL cornerback Stanford Brout in the building, well-spoken Wednesday here on In the Loop. Who do players go to whenever they have an issue with their coach? And I'm not saying, you know, I want to be traded or something like that, but just somewhere to air things out. Like, do you go to the GM? Do you go to, like, where do you go? Like, let's say
within the organization?
Upset. Yeah.
It all depends on how that organization is set up. I can give you guys
just give me a traditional organizational outlook because we can't compare the Texans organization to anything we've seen before.
Then, if you have a problem with, let's say, Bill O'Brien as the head coach, let's say his play calling, he won't start you, and then you want to request a trade, then obviously you're going to have to go to Bill O'Brien to request the trade, or if you have a good rapport with Cal McNair, then you would just simply go to him.
Okay.
I know I can give you a quick little story. Back in my days in Oakland, we had Lane Kiffin. He was the head coach out there, obviously. And I remember we had just traded for a player, and that basically moved me back to playing nickelback and not being a starter anymore. So I was very upset about it. And I decided that, you know what, I want to be traded. So I just simply did not go to offseason workouts. And anybody that knows anything about the NFL, coaches are control freaks. They want you to be at off-season workouts, like at all costs, no matter what. If you're both of your limbs and both of your legs are on your body, you need to be at off-season workouts. And I remember Lane would call me every week basically saying, hey, Stan, how come you aren't out here? And I'd be, hey, man, Lane, you know, listen, it's much warmer in Texas. I'd much rather work out here, this, that, and the other. I don't want to fly to the Bay Area. It's 60 degrees out there in June in the Bay Area. I'd much rather stay in 90-degree weather and get a workout in Texas. And I remember Lane, he tried to lean on me and basically tell me, like, you need to go ahead and get out here. I'm the head coach. I say
so. Yeah, okay.
And I said, Lane, man, listen. I said, I've only been in the league a couple years, but everybody knows who runs the ship here.
Yeah.
I've already cleared it with Al, so it is what it is.
Let me ask you this.
And then I just hung up.
Because I think you just stumbled upon something there, Landry, that I hadn't even thought of all day long.
Damn, I like Lane Kiffin even more now.
Players hold a grudge against the general manager regularly for roster decisions. For Jadeveon Clowney moving on from Jadeveon Clowney, players are going to hold a grudge.
Oh, yes.
Well, now it's the guy that you play for.
Oh, believe me. Let me explain something.
You know what I mean?
Let me explain something to you guys. If you think there is not at least, let's say, on every 53-man roster, if you think that it is not, I'd say 12. Mm-hmm. That's a nice round number. 12 guys on each team. Each team. Not on a team. Each team. That there's 12 guys that look at their head coach like, man, I don't really, really fool with him.
Yeah.
He's the guy that calls the play, so I got to go ahead and smile on his face, say, what's up, coach? But there's about 12 guys on every roster that are like, when it comes to the head coach, they're like, you know.
I don't
hate him, but if he's in a burning building, I ain't exactly going to run in there and, try to save him.
Damn, dude.
But what I'm saying is, believe
me on this.
Well, let's say a big majority of the Texans on the defensive side of the ball have to have DJ Reader. They love DJ Reader. They have to have him on the roster next year, and Bill O'Brien moves on from him. It used to be you could be pissed off at Brian Gain. You could be pissed off at Rick Smith, and it was easy for Bill O'Brien to say, hey, man, you know, my hands were tied, yes, blah, blah, blah. Well, now There's one person, and it's the same guy you're playing for.
And I know where you're going with that, J-Lo, and I'm going to tell you like this. You're going to have a problem with your GM slash head coach because they did not bring back DJ Reader, but you are not about to let it show to the detriment of where it could actually affect you on the field.
Sure.
Simply because what you put on the field, that's your resume. So you're not going to take a chance and let your beef with your head coach slash GM affect how you put your resume out there for everybody in the league to see.
Right.
Because even if you are on the first year of a big, monstrous contract, it's still your resume. So whenever you get released, traded, your contract runs out, things like that, that's what GMs are going to look at is your play on the field. So that's your resume. So even if a player has a problem with a head coach, he's not going to let that affect his play.
Sure.
Because that's ultimately going to affect his money. And no player wants to be able to go out there and not get paid as much as he wants, be able to go out there and not be able to provide for his family. So you're not going to have a situation where a player is going to actually dog it on the field.
Right.
All because, you know,
there'll be
he has a beef with
clubhouse attorneys, though.
Oh, no question.
Guys in the locker room.
No question. But I mean, but as a player, you know what it is. And even if there's a guy who's frustrated with a head coach, a GM, a D coordinator, offense coordinator, what have you, you get it simply because we all are a team. But at the end of the day, we all are our own entity.
Sure.
So if this player over here is playing really, really well, and it seems like the ownership, seems like the organization does not want to pay him, hey, I get it. I understand that he needs to get his money. So when he vents in the locker room, I'm not just going to roll my eyes because I understand his dilemma. I understand the rock and a hard place that he's stuck in between. So I think that even when you got your locker room lawyers, because believe me, they're like that on every team.
Sure.
As a player, you understand it. You get it.
Stanford Brout in the building, and former NFL cornerback here on Well Spoken Wednesday. Let's talk about the big game, the Super Bowl. Let's get a little bit more into this Texans and cover every single angle. That's next. Former NFL cornerback Stanford Brout in the building, Well Spoken Wednesday. Bill O'Brien, the king, coach slash GM slash offensive coordinator slash whatever the hell he wants to be. B.O.B. is the king. Stanford, we'll get into the big game in just a second, but this Bill O'Brien news. Do you think that Bill O'Brien is going to have a longer shelf life? Because J-Lo looked at this as somewhat of an extension. Do you look at this as an extension, or do you think this actually gives him enough rope to where he can hang himself earlier than we would have thought before this announcement was made yesterday by Cal McNair?
Okay, well, first off, are you guys talking about extension at the
I think he's kicking the can down the road. I think he basically bought himself 2 more years.
I could agree with what you're saying about 2 more years. I do believe that even if things do not work out with him as a head coach, maybe they might just go ahead and keep him as a GM for maybe a year or two after that. Hold on. Hear me out now.
Can you imagine?
Hold on. Hear me out. This is what I'm simply saying. As far as an extension for the head coach, Bill O'Brien, maybe so. I could very well see if this thing tumbles and this thing just does not go well, they'll go ahead and yank that GM role off of him, off of his back, and go ahead and just keep him in his head coaching position.
Oh my god.
I could very well see that. Yes, I could see that. Like, guys, remember, Rack was the D coordinator, went to the front office. Vrabel goes and gets the head coaching job for Tennessee. Rack comes out of the front office back to the DC role. So it's not far fetched where, oh my god, there's no possible way that could happen.
Oh my gosh.
It's unlikely, though.
Yes, it's unlikely.
Because once he's if he fails, he fails.
AF.
Yeah.
Like I said, I've seen stranger things happen before. Is all I'm basically saying.
I mean, yeah.
And I think we're in uncharted territory right now with the Houston Texans with this type of upgrade at the. I'm sorry, not upgrade, but this type of promotion. From head coach to head coach and GM, we're in uncharted territory for this organization.
There we are. Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't necessarily know that's that's a great thing. I don't necessarily think that's a great thing. Do you think Bill O'Brien wanted this title? Because some people say yes. I say no.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he did.
I do, too. I agree with you, for Stan.
I think he did.
Well, if the power's been the same for the last 8 months, then why would you want the title?
Because now it's official.
But now you can't. Now you can't mask your accountability.
No, you can't, but it's just like a female who would rather be married, actually be married, than just live with a guy and we have kids together, things like that. She'd want to be married. She wants it official. Same thing for Bill O'Brien. He wants that official because when I walk into the room, you see me as the GM and the head coach.
They already did.
Yes, but when I walk into that room, it's official now.
No,
it's,
I think he did.
It's not the head coach pseudo GM. No, it ain't that.
But I thought
I'm walking into this room and you know that he's the GM and the head coach.
But Lopez, yesterday you said that if you could not have the title, then you would agree with it. So you said something completely different 24 hours ago.
No, let me explain. I agreed with you that he benefited from that. You know, there was always some plausible deniability. There was always kind of a smoke screen, a mysterious air as to who's really doing what, which is part of the reason, as you remember, about this time yesterday, we were saying, what if when we get off the air, I wanted him to have that title so that could be eliminated. I think he wanted it for a different reason. I think he wanted it because these are human beings and they have ambition and goals and ego just like everyone else. You know what Bill O'Brien's walking into that room? He's saying, hey, boys, I'm the head guy in charge, man. And if you don't believe it, here's my card.
He's walking. Listen, Landry, he's walking in. He's walking in with that BD energy.
I thought he always did.
But now.
He's Vince McMahon. But he walked in there like Vince McMahon.
But now
today.
It's even bigger. Mm-hmm. He's walking in with that BD energy, man.
So you don't think that you think he acts more combative? Do you think he acts maybe a little bit more buttoned up? Like, does the responsibility to act a certain way? A lot of times when you get a promotion and an official title, you have an obligation to button up.
Yes, it all depends on
the person. A lot of times the ego can go to someone's head and they can go on the other side of things. What do you think Bill O'Brien's personality is going to be like now that he has both these titles?
I think he's probably just going to go ahead and be the same guy.
Yeah, he's not going to change.
It really just depends on who signs your checks. And if your superior is okay with you continuing to be the way that you have been, because me being the way that I have been is what got me this promotion. So I might as well go ahead and stick with me being my authentic self. So I don't think that it's a far-gone conclusion that he's going to be more buttoned up. He's going to try to be more diplomatic. He's going to be more PC.
Plus, he's not going to change. He's not wired that way.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think he is. I think that he's just who he is, and you're either going to like it, you're going to love it, or you're going to hate it and deal with it.
What about from an organizational standpoint? Because, you know, like, it's no secret. You know this, Stanford. You talk to people. Like, Bill O'Brien's not quite beloved in this town. Like, let's just be honest. I think he knows that. I think they know that over there. Like,
as I was listening, driving into the loopholes, calling and giving their opinion.
Exactly. So with that said, now that you know that he's the GM and there's not, I don't want to call it uncertainty, but the title isn't there, so you could still have some naive people that think that maybe it's a group decision that goes into everything.
Uh-huh.
How do you think that impacts the organization? Like, does that impact the organization negatively in that now Bill O'Brien becomes even the more the face of criticism, or does it impact the organization positively in that now there's that transparency and you can now see who is making the decisions instead of the uncertainty? Because I think that's both sides of the argument. Like, does the organization benefit from what they've said has been going on for 8 months becoming official?
Well, now it's just going to become more transparent, where if they go out, they make bad selections in the draft, they don't sign a lot of good talent in free agency, or they're just simply not able to, it's very transparent on who do we put that onus on? Who do we put the blame on? Now, as far as how they look, whether it winds up being positive or negative, that's just going to come down to wins and losses. Because if you have Bill O'Brien right now as the head coach and the GM, they go and they draft well. They sign a couple of good players that actually pop in free agency. And they go to the AFC title game next year, and let's say they lose to the Baltimore Ravens or the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC title game in an actual close fashion, not up 24, and they get blown out by 20-something, giving up 50 points in three quarters. And then it'll actually be a positive, because you know what? They made it to the AFC title game. It was a hard-fought game. They lost in the fourth quarter on the final drive.
Yeah.
Then you know what? Okay, it looks positive for the organization because we've actually taken a step forward. And you know what? We now know exactly where we can shift our blame, or we can shift our applause to the decisions that are made to the roster, because we know who's the one doing it.
But it seems like all the good organizations in the NFL, and you can name very, very many examples, they realize that just because you make progress from 1 year to the next doesn't mean anything. Like,
it doesn't mean it's going to be sustained. No, it doesn't.
I don't think you can look at stuff like that. Like Jacksonville, when they got one quarter away from the AFC Championship, they hung with Blake Bortles despite the fact it was kind of clear that
he wasn't the guy that was going to get you there, and it backfired on him. And,
yes.
And you've seen Denver do the opposite with Tebow. They won the play. They won the playoff game.
John Elway comes in, gets Tim Tebow up out of there.
They got Peyton Manning, and then they even made the playoffs with John Fox. They got rid of him. Kubiak comes in. They take the next step. Like, it just doesn't seem like that's the way that smart organizations think. The Titans, they fired Mike Mularkey after they beat the Kansas City Chiefs. And they hired Mike Vrabel, and they were in the AFC Championship 2 years later.
Yes, exactly. But, and I'll use the Tennessee Titans to your point. I can right now see the Tennessee Titans going 7-9
for sure
in 2020
for sure,
and not even be surprised
yeah.
just by the way that their team is constructed
right.
and how they gain their success.
Right.
And all I'm simply saying is with the Jacksonville Jaguars in that 2017 season, why they kept Blake Bortles and stuck with him, I get it.
They know,
Because this is why. It's only about 6 to 7 franchise quarterbacks on this planet. Everybody else is an also-ran that, you know what, he has a good defense, he has a good run game.
Or a good year.
Put good players around him. So when you look at that situation for the Jacksonville Jaguars and a Blake Bortles, unless you are definitively getting a better player, sometimes, man, you just got to dance with the girl that brought you to the party.
But you can't just say, well, we did better than we've done and we've made progress, so we're going to roll with it. I'll take it a step further.
That's why I said going to the AFC title game and losing a hard-fought game. Not just, we made it to the AFC title game. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying making it to the AFC title game and losing in, let's say, the fourth quarter on the final drive.
Okay.
Where it was clearly seen like, you know what, that was a really good game. Like, they impressed me. Something like that.
Okay. What about loyalty, John? You talked about this, OG. Loyalty to your guys. And we always talk about...
I think that's one of his big flaws.
Exactly. So when he's the one signing the guys and he's the one making the decisions, if Bill O'Brien signs somebody who ends up being a disappointment, is he going to be able to admit that he was wrong and be able to punt on his guy like a lot of GMs have to?
There's more GMs that won't punt than ones that will.
Well, because they want to be right. They don't want to look bad.
Just off of that loyalty thing right there.
But that's what we're talking about, Stan. Let me give you an example. There were players, who was it? Sam Montgomery was one. A couple of players that were just awful draft choices that Bill O'Brien cut in 1 year. I mean, you can go down the list.
They were going to cut Martinez Rankin last year.
Martinez Rankin.
And that was
And you know why
pick.
He could do that?
Because it weren't his picks.
They weren't his picks. But now, if you get another Sam Montgomery or Martinez Rankin, and Bill O'Brien's name is next to it, I mean, hold on. Hold on to your seat.
No, you're right.
Because he ain't going to cut him.
Guys, there's a lot of GMs that are like that.
Now he's the same guy.
Yes, I understand that. And all I'm simply saying is you'll be surprised at the number, the disparity of GMs / head coaches that like to hang on to guys because, you know what, they have some sort of emotional attachment. They want to be loyal. Then guys who will just simply cut bait.
You'll be surprised. Let's talk a little football here, though, because I was mentioning this to you.
Talking football?
Well, actually, on the field.
X's and O's.
On the field.
Quit being an antagonist.
Hey, welcome to my world, man. 16 hours a week. Or what is it? 20 hours a week. So, Jonathan Joseph may be gone.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably likely that he's gone. Can we agree on that? Or at least moved on to another team or a new role or whatever?
I mean, I would think so.
Right? There are reports out there that the Texans are going to move on from Bradley Roby, which would leave them with basically Garyon Conley and Lonnie Johnson Jr.
First round pick, second round pick,
and
possibly a Vernon Hargraves.
And maybe Vernon Hargraves.
Hargraves always mix up his name.
I feel like they're going to have to pick a cornerback in the first round, man.
I'm going to tell you why you shouldn't pick a cornerback in the first round. Because you shouldn't have to. You went out and you traded for Garyon Conley, former first-round pick from Ohio State a couple years ago. Now you have Vernon Hargraves that you picked up off the waiver wire after he was cut by Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He was a first-round pick, I believe, back in 2016. He was like the first cornerback taken out of Florida. And then guess what? You have Lonnie Johnson. You took him in the second round last year out of Kentucky. That's three guys who are high picks. So if you need to go and draft a corner in the first round, then what the hell did you drafting Lonnie Johnson? What the hell did you do making the trade for Gary and Conley?
Well, he'll say that wasn't his. He'll say those weren't his guys. The Conley trade was him, but he can say Lonnie Johnson wouldn't mind.
Okay, well, you know what? You can still develop him, man.
Well, regardless of what you should you do. See what I'm saying? So, no, but here's the thing. Regardless of what you should and shouldn't do, and, they're going to be short on cornerbacks.
But the Vernon Hargraves pickup was his.
But they're going to be short on cornerbacks is my point. Forget what they should and shouldn't do. My philosophy, if I was an NFL general manager, I would draft a quarterback just about every year until I found a franchise quarterback. And I would draft a cornerback every other year no matter what. Even if I had starters on, because I think you're always going to need cornerbacks for special teams, for nickel, for whatever.
Let me ask you guys this. Who were the top pass defenses in the NFL this year?
That would be, well, San Francisco was one, weren't they?
Uh-huh.
And the New England Patriots?
Uh-huh. And another one was the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right.
So you have Richard Sherman. I don't even know who else is in the San Francisco secondary. I really don't. Mm-hmm. You have the New England Patriots, Stephon Gilmore, Gilligan's Island. And then you have McCourty, Harmon, guys like that. And then with the Pittsburgh Steelers, obviously you got Minka Fitzpatrick coming over for the Miami Dolphins. And you got Joe Hayden just made to the Pro Bowl again as an alternate. And all I'm simply saying is, you do not need to have an array of first-round picks to be good in the secondary in the NFL. You just got to have guys who know what they're doing and play within the scheme that coach is actually implementing. So all I'm simply saying is if you got Lonnie Johnson and you got Gary and Conley and you got Vernon Hargreaves and possibly, like you just said, Bradley Roby, they're going to move on from him, J. Joe, assuming that he will not be back. That is enough for you to have a good pass defense. It just comes down to coaching, it comes down to scheme, and it comes down to you developing your players. So it's not that they simply just, the cupboard is bare and there's nothing back there. You just got to actually go ahead and actually develop what you have because apparently they had enough talent to be drafted within the first 450 picks of the NFL draft.
But I mean,
so they have something there.
On the other side of things, if we're talking about Conley and Hargraves, their teams didn't want them. Like, they punted on him early. Like, Conley, third-round pick.
And I'm going to tell you like this.
That's what they traded for.
Based on what I saw.
Nobody else wanted Hargraves either. We need to make that clear.
No, I understand.
Nobody else put a waiver claim in on him.
Based on what I saw.
Nobody. Literally nobody.
Based on what I saw out of the Oakland Raiders, Gary and Conley.
Mm-hmm.
He looked vastly better in a Houston Texans uniform than he did in Oakland Raiders uniform.
No, he did.
And all I'm simply saying is that down the stretch, we're excluding the Kansas City Chiefs game because they're in the Super Bowl. They got talent all over the field. Did Gary and Conley just go out there and get roasted? Was he toast all year when he was with the Houston Texans this year?
No.
Exactly. So
he had moments where he's pretty good.
Exactly. Yeah. So go ahead and let's see what you have there.
But again, I think, you know, that's all true. And like I said, if I were a GM, I'd draft a cornerback every other year no matter what. Even if I had Sherman on one end and McCourty on the other, because I just think you need them. You always need fresh, young bodies.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm just saying I don't think first round.
But let's set all that aside. They're short on cornerbacks. You can talk about Conley, and that's true, and Lonnie Johnson, and that's true.
When you say
and
short even, on corners,
they, you, and bodies. I mean, who are they?
How many bodies do
corner,
you,
bro? They're not going to have enough good players at cornerback.
Say that again.
Yeah, they're not good at corner, man. It's their J-Joe's
gone and Roby could be gone.
I know J-Joe probably will be gone. I get that. You say that they're going to move on from Bradley Roby. I understand that. What I'm simply saying is, are you saying they're short on corners as far as bodies, or they're short on corners as far as they don't have any top talent?
Quality. Both.
Quality.
Lonnie Johnson, projection, you know, so maybe he'll be quality. Gary and Conley has been up and down. I mean, he was... You know, as we just talked about.
But let's not go ahead and judge Gary and Conley, Oakland Raiders uniform. Let's judge Gary and Conley.
I mean, the other options are Keon Crossen. I mean, you know, they need to draft a cornerback. I think more so than an outside rusher.
Now, I'm not saying they don't need to draft a corner. I'm saying they don't need to take one in the first round.
Well, they don't have a first round with their second round pick.
I wouldn't even say second round. You can get one third, fourth, fifth round. Believe me, Richard Sherman was a fifth rounder, guys.
Yeah.
Like, let's go ahead and Chris Harris, one of my favorite corners in the
Stanford
league.
Route.
Undrafted.
He was my second rounder. And you insulted him like that.
No, I'm saying he wasn't a first rounder.
Oh.
Yeah.
So all I'm simply saying, man, like, you can find good corners that are not taken in the top 32 picks because so much of today's game, outside of Gilligan's Island, Stephon Gilmore, one of my favorite guys, and a Chris Harris, outside of that, man, so much of this league and playing in the back end is scheme, pass rush, things like that, where you do not need to be a baller to actually be a baller. You really, really don't.
Stanford route in the building. Who's going to win the big game?
Ah, man. On the one hand, the 49ers were my favorite team growing up, childhood favorite. Then you got the Kansas City Chiefs, the team that I played for. They're part of my division, the AFC West. I'm a little bit torn, but I would have – and because – and, yes, I'm going to give you a shout-out, and I know you're going to give me a lot of hell for it. Because our defense coordinator, Ray Davis, is such a big Kansas City Chiefs fan, it pains me, but I would go with the Kansas City Chiefs to win.
I think that's a safe pick, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know
that's
gonna,
a lot of weapons.
He's going to give me so much crap for actually siding with him. He's probably texting my phone right now, but I'd probably have to go with KC beating San Francisco.
Seems like that's where I'm leaning, man. I mean, it's just too much firepower.
Because, you know why? And I remember this is something that, you know, I used to always just converse with Namdi about and a lot of other guys, even Michael Hubb back in my days in Oakland, is that whenever you see teams and they are stellar in the back end, they're stellar on defense, and you see that fearsome foursome pass rush that they have,
right?
It almost kind of makes you a little jealous because they're able to play with that pass.
You can do so much more.
Yes, you can do so much more.
So much more.
I want to see exactly how this San Francisco secondary matches up against that track team that Pat Mahomes has at his disposal.
I think it's a lot. Go ahead, J-Lo. Sorry.
I just always believed that if I had a great pass rush, I would tell my cornerbacks to jump just about every route.
Yeah, exactly.
Jump every route.
Because the pass rush is going to take care of everything.
I do think, though, despite the fact that I agree with you on the Chiefs, this feels a lot like Richard Sherman's one Super Bowl ring, where Richard Sherman was going against the Broncos. Peyton Manning was the MVP. Everybody was talking about the weapons the Broncos had. Broncos were the pick that everybody was making.
I remember that
game. And they got the brakes tapped off them by
more
physical team.
They got the brakes beat off of them.
This feels a lot like leading into it. Now, I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily going to play out that way, but it does kind of feel that way because San Francisco, I mean, they ain't no slouch.
Oh, no, you got the unstoppable force with Pat Mahomes and that Kansas City Chiefs aerial attack, and then you have the immovable object with the 49ers defense.
Stanford route in the building. Well spoken Wednesday. Stanford, always a pleasure, man.
Thank you guys, man. Happy to always be back on with you.
So Stanford route is picking the Chiefs.
Yes, I would go with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Raider picking the Chiefs. How about that?
I know. They're probably going to blow me up on Twitter.
He played for the Chiefs as well, though.
He did
play for the Chiefs. Thanks to Stanford for joining the show. Thanks to the Loopholes for all their contributions. Thanks to Figgy Fig for being the best in the world at what he do. My gosh, there's been a lot going on. Who knows what else is going to happen? Heck.
So Monday was breaking news. Tuesday was breaking news. Today was breaking news.
What's next?
What's going to happen tomorrow?
What is next? Whatever does happen tomorrow, we'll be with you. Jamesy Hedebo is going to join the show. This has been another edition of In the Loop for the OG John Lopez. I'm Landry Locker. Clint Sterner and Company is next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.